pleasure and the privilege to be with you tonight for us to think for a while about a kind of a lesson. I guess it's not exactly usual for me, and maybe a little bit different kind of a lesson than we might ordinarily think about. But I believe it's so very, very important for us to get our thinking right. I had a teacher one time who told a story. Said there was a fellow who was just a bum. Wouldn't hit, as we used to say, a lick at a snake. He was just a bum. And somebody asked him, said, why are you a bum? Well, he said, I guess it's because I think bum thoughts. And I think that illustrates a principle that's in the Bible. As a man thinks in his heart, what about it? So is he. And the things that we think about determine what we're going to do. And so I'd like for us to think about, just for a minute, about the importance of the things that we think about. Why is all that so important? Let me mention a passage of Scripture to you, first in the New Testament, in Matthew chapter 15. Jesus talked about the significance of what we think about. In Matthew 15, beginning with verse 18, there were some people who worried a great deal about what they ate, and we're conscious of that. Too, but they were concerned about it from a religious point of view, and Jesus talking about it, it's not what goes into a man that defiles him, it's what comes out. And so he said, he illustrated what he meant in verse 18. He said, but the things which proceed out of the mouth come forth out of the heart, and they defile the man. Now, when the word heart is used in the Bible, almost always it has reference to one's mind, to what you think. So what he really is saying, out of the mouth, the things that proceed out of a person's mouth come forth out of the heart, that is, out of his mind. What we say, we first think about, in other words. So he illustrates verse 19. For out of the heart, and we'll use the word mind, though I think it'll help us, out of the heart come forth evil thoughts. Evil thoughts. Murders. Adulteries. Fornications. Thefts. False witness. Railings. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashing hands defileth not the man. Now, let's look at that just for a minute. He says, out of the heart or from one's mind proceed evil thoughts and then various actions like murder. Now, and fornication and adultery. Have you ever heard somebody say, you know, I just said that before I thought. Nearly every time if you look back on your life, nearly every time you got in trouble is because of your tongue, wasn't it? And we say, I just said that before I thought. No, that isn't so, really. Now, we might not have thought long enough about what we said, but we thought it or we wouldn't have said it. Did a person ever steal something from somebody else, be a thief, without first thinking about it? I don't believe so. See how important our thoughts are? Did a person ever commit fornication or commit adultery against his wife or the wife against the husband without first thinking about it? No. You see, out of the heart, out of your mind, proceed these kind of things. In the Old Testament, in Genesis 6 and verse 5, The Bible says that this was right before the flood. The Bible says that the imaginations and the thoughts of man's heart was only on the evil continually. Well, if their imaginations and thoughts were evil, then they did evil, and God said that it repented God that he had made man. He said, I'm going to destroy him from off the face of the earth. And he sent the flood, and he did so. But it was because of the people's thinking. In Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, the Bible says, you keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. So, really what we're thinking about here now, and this shows the importance of our thoughts, and what we think about, the next step after you think about it, is what you do. So we think, and then we do. These are our actions. Is a man a thief? He first thought about it. Is a person a fornicator? He first thought about it. Then he did it. But the Bible teaches that we will be judged on the basis of what we do. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10 says, we must all be made manifest before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one, that's you and me, that each one may receive the deeds that we've done in our body. We'll be judged like that. We're going to be judged on the basis of what we do, but if we're going to be judged on the basis of what we do, we better be careful about what we think, because what we think, we do. And so, that's how important our thoughts really are. And the Bible teaches us that we can do whatever we want to do, but in the final analysis, we're going to have to be judged for what we do. We have a number of young people here tonight. There's a passage that's interesting in the book of Ecclesiastes I want to mention just in this connection, if I can find it real quickly. In Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and in verse 9, here's what it says. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth. Let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth. Youth is a happy time. And you walk in the ways of your heart. In other words, to walk in the ways of your heart means you do what you want to do. This is particularly addressed to young people. And in the sight of thine eyes. But, now here's the catch. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. And so, in the next chapter in verse 1, he tells us to remember your Creator in the days of your youth. But what that says is, you go ahead and you act like you ought to act, but remember you're going to be judged on the basis of what you do. And so, if we'll be judged on the basis of what we do, and we have the choice of acting like we want to act, then if we'll get our thinking right, our deeds will be right, and we won't fear the judgment. So, that's how important, really, our thinking is. Now, a person can think either good things or bad things. So, I'd like for us to think just for a minute. What could be the source of evil or bad thoughts or thinking? Can we illustrate the source of thinking? I think what we'll do first is just talk about not necessarily the source of evil thinking. Let's just think first about the source of all of our thinking, our thoughts, and then we'll talk about this in just a minute. But the source of our thoughts. How does a thought generate within our mind? We're people that have a brain, a mind, Where do these thoughts come from? Well, first of all, let me say that sight is a wonderful blessing. To be able to see. Have you ever thought how it would be to be blind? I've talked with a good many blind people. And I am so thankful that I'm able to see. And I know you are. But the source of a lot of our thinking is really from things that we see. We see some things and we think about it. I had just been married a short while, and my brother-in-law lived up in New York, and I'd never been to any place like that. And we went with my father-in-law and mother-in-law. We went up there to see Sewell, his wife. Well, I'd never seen New York City at all, but we got in the car one day, and we drove right downtown, the heart of the city. And we went through a section that they called the Bowery. You ever heard of that? And what that is a place like you have never seen, I suppose, unless you've been around some of these folk places. I've never seen it. But here'd be grown men just lying around out on the street. Some of them were drawn up in a corner in kind of a fetal position, and they'd be sucking on a bottle. None of them be lying out here in the gutter. Dead or alive, I don't know. But there was a section, we rolled our windows up, we in the car, and locked our car door. We were scared to get out there. How low can humanity sink? Anybody that is thinking about taking a drink or alcoholic beverages, you ought to go to a place like that and see what the end result is. And a lot of cities have their places like that, don't they? Where people are down and out. Some of these folks were upstanding people who had made good money in years gone by, but it got hold of them. That affected my thinking. It's affected my thinking for all these years. And what I saw affected me a great deal. I had the privilege one time, I'd never been up in an airplane, and got up and the airplane ride in this case was one in which it was just raining on the ground, cloudy. But you get up above the clouds, and the sunshine is there, and those clouds, the billows across there, just look like if you could just get out of the plane and lie down on those beautiful white billows of clouds there, it'd be so good. Beautiful, fantastic sight. I thought about that a lot, but why did I think about it? Because I saw it. What we see affects our thinking. Have you ever been up on top of a high mountain, looked out across the expanse? And I think about, now this is not a very big mountain, but you can go up here to Chattanooga, Tennessee, get on top of Lookout Mountain, and there's Moccasin Bend as it comes around there, and you get out there and you see those hills across there, and on a beautiful day, just fantastic sight. Beautiful. So we're affected a great deal by what we see. And the source of our thoughts, too, is by some things that we hear. Some things that we hear. I've been sound asleep, just getting along real, real good. My wife grew up, in their high school, lived over there in Bessemer, and they had to have burglar bars there. They had a thief come in at night and break in their house. And so she's been very careful. Where I grew up, we never locked the door. We just went to bed and everything's all right. Nobody, didn't worry about even locking doors. I guess if I ever get a divorce, it'll be because she sued me for not locking the door. But I just wasn't used to locking doors. But I'd be sound asleep, and she'd wake up and say, Did you hear that? Well, we're affected by what we hear. And some of you got little babies here at night. You're asleep, but you got, you know, if that little baby cries, especially if it's sick, that brings a flood of thoughts to you. How's that baby doing? Or maybe if you've ever had your house to burn down, and then some even years later, you hear the fire engine, the siren blowing, and so on, that you're startled by it. We're affected by what we hear. And I think that we're affected by things that we may be able to feel. What we feel affects us a great deal. When I was a boy, we grew up on a farm, and we had some chickens that would go down, be around a barn down there, and they'd have a nest there and lay eggs there. And my oldest brother, sometimes, occasionally, darkness would slip up on us, and we were supposed to gather eggs every night. And so if it'd get a little dark, he'd want me to go down and reach my hand in there and get those eggs out. Well, I did one time, like a foolish person listened to your older brother. And I thought I was going to feel an egg, but I felt a snake. You know, these old chicken snakes get in there. It wouldn't hurt you, but, man, that's awful feeling. I can still feel it nearly. And what we feel affects our thinking a great deal. Now, as a boy, we had a man that lived close by on the farm, and there's a creek ran down through there, and he liked to grabble for fish. Now, if you don't know what that is, what you do, and he'd get me to go along, I'd carry a sack. And we'd get down in that creek, go down through there, and he'd get down, go under that water down there, and feel around under those rocks, and he'd come out with fish, catch them with his hands, put them in that sack. And he'd try to get me to do that. Well, I'd get my hand down there, and I'd feel that fish, but I didn't know if it was a fish or a snake. I just couldn't do that. I can't do it to this day. I don't want somebody else can do that. So we're affected by the things that we feel. You take just a hold a little child in your hand. Wonderful feeling, and you think about a lot of things, what they grow up to be. Good feeling. Or a good friend that you've got, and maybe some calamity's come in your home, you've had some tragedy or something, and that friend comes and takes you by the hand, and that good handshake. That affects our faith. Whole lot. And, of course, you know where I'm going now in all this, but our sense of smell. Driving down the road, and car in front of you has hit a skunk. And you get a little odoriferous in your car. And you have, on the other hand, you go up to somebody's house and they making some hot biscuits, and you smell that. See, we're affected different ways by different kinds of smells, or the smell of a rose. And I think that probably we're affected more in our thinking by the people we're with than nearly anything else. The people that we associate with, the folks that we have to be, we're affected by them a lot. If we're with people that we kind of like, it's a good feeling, but if you have to work all day long by somebody who just is cantankerous and hateful and despised, you know, it's miserable, isn't it? Terrible. And we have a lot of faults. Our thinking is affected by the people we're with. And we're affected a great deal in our thinking by where we are. By where we are. I've been out of the country a few times. I was way down in Argentina one time for about a month. And came time to go home, and airplane flight, we were to leave out of Argentina and come through the country of Chile. But about a week before we were scheduled to go, they closed the border between Argentina and Chile. They got in some kind of fuss down there among themselves, but it opened up. We could leave, but where I was, here I am, way away from my people. In a foreign country. I'm not a citizen down here. And to walk by the American embassy and see the American flag out there and to be able to walk in there, it's a good feeling when you're down there with folks not exactly friendly towards you. So where we are affects our thinking. Now, what are we supposed to be thinking about? What does the Bible teach you and me to think about? Well, I want to read one verse. Philippians chapter 4. You're familiar with this, probably have it memorized, but it's such a wonderful verse. And then, I don't care how old we are, how young we are, we need this verse very, very much. We just ought to be kind of put on the refrigerator door. Write it out and stick it on the refrigerator door or stick it on a mirror at home somewhere. And here's what it says. Finally, brethren, Philippians 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honorable, whatsoever things are just. What have we got so far? The true, and the honorable, and the just, and the things that are pure. That song we had a while ago. Pure in heart, O God, help me to be. May I devote my life wholly to Thee. Think on things that are pure. My daddy had a little small farm, a few acres. But he ran a cotton gin, really, to make a living. And when I always picked cotton till I was about 14, and then he put me in the cotton gin. I worked there about 19-something. And in the later years, we had a diesel engine that would power that cotton gin. And it would run about 3-4 months out of the year, and then it would just set up. So every year before we get to start ginning season, Daddy would get some fella out there, he's a good diesel mechanic, and he'd go over that engine, be sure it's in good shape. Well, the fella that came several years in a row had an excellent name as diesel mechanic. But my daddy didn't like for me to be around out there when he was working. That was undoubtedly the cussedest man I've ever known my whole life. He didn't just have a wrench. He had a lot of names for that wrench. And he just had a foul mouth. That's all there was to it. Whatsoever things were pure, he didn't know what that meant. I believe he must have thought evil continually, like Genesis 6:5. That's the nearest I've, in my life, come to that. I had a course over here at the university one time, and we had a visiting teacher that was just given what I thought I was one of a real outstanding lecture for, well, it lectures several days. But he was a foul-mouthed man. And he'd illustrate things. He was teaching on various types of physical disabilities, and he could describe children with various types of afflictions. He knew his subject matter. He could just tell you all about it. But he'd just cuss all through. So finally I asked him one day after class, I said, Dr. Harvey, I said, you're a man with an unusually fine vocabulary. Why do you think it's necessary for you to cuss? Oh, he said, I just do it to make a point. I said, well, your vocabulary is too good. You don't need to say that. That's offensive to some people. And I said, you can describe it just wonderfully. And he didn't take offense. Some teachers would have failed him. But he didn't. And to be pure in our thinking, that's what this says. And whatsoever things are lovely and whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Some people like to hear bad reports on people. That's all they want to hear, so they can turn around and report it to somebody else. That's called gossiping. But you think on things that are pure and lovely and are a good report. That's why we have to think on these things. And there are a lot of things out here that we use our senses here which generate evil thinking. And let me see if I can illustrate that now. We know what we're to think about, the things that are pure and lovely and are a good report, to think on these things. You see, becoming a Christian and following God and Christ is not just being baptized and eating the Lord's Supper and giving as we're prospered and singing like we did. Not all that is essential. We must be baptized in order to be saved. But the gospel of Christ is designed to change our way of thinking, which in turn changes our way of action, which in turn gets us ready for the judgment, you see. Thoughts, actions, judgment. And so, what about evil things? You know, the Lord decided to destroy the world by the flood because of people's evil thinking and subsequent evil actions, I take it. So, where do all these bad thoughts come from? Have you heard of rock music? Somebody said, I like it. Have you ever taken time to see what the words say and listen to what those words say? I'm not any musician myself. I like good music. I like, my wife plays piano. Grandkids taking violin lessons. I love it. But I can't play a note myself. But I know music is probably just like our songs here. The words of these songs are designed to teach and to admonish us, aren't they? Well, what about what we see on, we hear on TV and radio music-wise? I guess a lot of the country music today, kind of the theme of it would be something like this. A fellow gets in a little spat with his wife. Everything's fine. He marries and gets in a little spat. So he decides he'd go down to the local bar, and he'll get him a drink and drown his sorrows. And while there, he meets another woman who's had a spat with her husband. And so she's there for the same purpose. And then they sort of get together after a few drinks. And then pretty soon, well, here they go, and they have a one-night stand or a two-night stand, or they may get married. See? And that's the theme of most of it. Isn't that right? Now you think about it. Isn't that right? Isn't that what most country music's all about? It's a story about the same story. Back when I was a boy in high school, one of the popular songs then was Pistol Packing Mama, Lay That Pistol Down. And see, that thing has affected me all these years. I was in high school, but I still remember the words to that song. Well, that wasn't too good a song. It didn't have too good a music back then. But we have to be careful, because good music is wonderful. It's soothing. It's helpful. It's good. But I want to tell you, a Christian, a child of God who wants to be more like Jesus, who saturates his mind, did you know the move is on now to label a lot of this, of the music that you can buy and put on the outside what the words say, because some of it is so filthy that even the general public is rising up against some of the stuff? Yeah. I guess something that affects our thinking about as much as anything now is the television. You see various studies. Most people watch TV from 3 to 5 hours a day. That's a lot of stuff. Wife and I were talking this morning. And there are some programs you know you ought not see to start with. But it may be a perfectly good program, but they take a break for a commercial and they'll have some of the most suggestive stuff on the commercial. Years ago, who would you think could dream up a filthy ad like, what about the telephone company? How in the world can you advertise getting a telephone in a bad way? How could that be possible? You know what they do? Let your fingers do the walking through the yellow pages. But you know on TV, you know what the fingers are that are doing the walking? It's some women with almost nothing on. Very scanty clothing. You see? That affected my thinking. And the beer advertisements today, they're powerful to generate thoughts. Nearly everything you can think of. But the movies, the television. And there's a passage in Galatians 5. I'll not take time to turn there. You'll know it because it's beginning verse 19. It deals with the works of the flesh. And he says the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, and then there's that long word called lasciviousness. We don't use that word very much in our common language, but you know what it means? If you get a good dictionary and you define it, the dictionary defines it, what it says is lasciviousness is indecent bodily movements. The unchaste, that is, impure handling of males and females. Back when I first started preaching some years ago, we would talk about whether young people particularly ought to go to dances or not. And people said, well, nearly all high schools now, if they want to think up something to do, they don't think much. They just have a dance. Just do it. That's easy to plan, see. And we made an argument back in those days that you ought not to go. Somebody says, well, if I dance with somebody, it doesn't affect my thinking. It doesn't make me want to commit fornication, for example. And said, you just don't know. But we argued that a person could take one of the opposite sex in their arms and turn the lights down low and have a music. That a person has to be opposed to not think of something, you know. Something to be wrong with. But people didn't pay attention to that. But we said, that's the way it was. And we came up with this idea that to illustrate the fact that really the dance does have a bearing upon one's sexual thoughts. So now, why don't when you have a dance, you have the girls to dance over here and the boys to dance over here? And people thought, well, you know, why have a dance if the girls and boys can't get together? And so we illustrated that to show that people wouldn't have, that they actually did have some thoughts when boys and girls got together. So if you separate, you'd kill the dance. I've lived long enough not to preach that anymore. Because all what you got now in our wicked society, you got the lesbians over here and the homosexuals over here. And they love each other. That's how wicked we've gotten in my lifetime. Well, that illustration won't work anymore. But lasciviousness, those that practice such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. Galatians 5, 19 and 20. I guess one of the best ways that evil thoughts are stimulated is for us to be with evil people. The Bible teaches what? Evil companionships corrupt good morals. And they will. Isn't it so pleasant that we can meet together here tonight with good people and we won't hear anything filthy tonight here together? But you go to work tomorrow somewhere and you got people in the world that don't care anything about the scriptures, or you go to the grocery store and you just hear and see every kind of filthy thing there is. The immodesty of dress in our day and time is something else. It's hard to even go to the drugstore or to the grocery store. And some women and men, too, ought to be ashamed. They really ought to be ashamed for how they dress. If you didn't get a copy, I think there's some copies on the back bench back there. It said, does dress affect whether or not people are raped? And that article is written not by preachers, but by young people in high school who commented about that
And some of the girls said, we'll wear whatever we want to do, and our body is our body. We'll do what we want to, and nobody has a right to treat us in a bad way. But those worldly boys, they said different, didn't they? Read that article. It's back there on the bench. How we dress affects how people react to us and what we think about. Back a good many years ago, when the miniskirt craze came on, some of you a little bit older remember that. I heard some men talking who were away, said, you know, it's getting where we can hardly take the Lord's Supper and go around and pass it through the congregation with the women's dresses are so short on both ends, it's embarrassing. Why would we take the Lord's Supper to walk up and down that? And yet we try to preach to our own brethren and sisters in Christ. And we ought to be ashamed. But here, folks are, they can dress nearly any way. And they can handle each other's bodies and still think we can be pure in thought. That's not so. That's not so. Well, let's look at something better. How can we stimulate some good things? Well, I believe we can do it just like we're doing right now. Be here in this meeting. When we attend assemblies of the church, and when we try to associate with some good people, I'll never forget when I left home out in Texas and went to Nashville to go to school, and far away from home. But I had a roommate in college, who became like a brother. Good person. I'll forever be thankful. He's dead now. Died when he was about 30 years old. I had to go help preach his funeral. But a good person, and he affected me so much. But what if I had gotten to be the roommate with some reprobate that didn't care, who liked to slip out of the dormitory and go drink, and who'd get filthy magazines, and who'd bring those things home? What if I'd gotten that kind of stuff? Where would I be? And so, if we can just be a companion. I think of a verse. I don't have it written down. I think it's I know it's in the 119th Psalm. Bear with me a minute till I see if I can find it exact. I think it's verse 60-something. Yeah. Psalm 119, verse 63. Psalm 119, verse says, I am a companion of all them that fear thee. Be a companion, brethren, of people who fear God. And of them that observe thy precepts. And you know, that ought to be put in our mind. I am a companion of people that fear God and who observe thy precepts. Isn't that fine? Now what that says to us also is, I ought to be that companion to somebody else too. I told our grandson, when school started this year, in seventh grade, I said, you've been to school now for a year last year, and I want you to make up your mind. Now, you know who does right and who doesn't do right. And just start off here. Make up your mind that you're going to be with those who do good in class. And those that don't do good, even if they're members of the church where we go, if they do bad, you drop them like a hot potato. I hope you'll follow that. We need the association of God's people. Oh, we need it. And that's why we need to be present. Every time the door is open, we need the association of one another. We need to be at one another's home. We need to meet each other occasionally somewhere and, have a Coca-Cola or a milkshake or going to diet, some yoga. We need some association with one another. And I tell you something else that will help us to think some good thoughts. If you and I will be busy teaching somebody
who doesn't know the gospel, if we'll teach them, you know that'll make us think good. Because if we're trying to teach them what to do to become a Christian, if they get the slightest idea that our thoughts are bad and what we do is bad, we may as well quit trying to teach them because they'll call us hypocrites or what we are. But when we're trying to teach somebody else, see, that makes us live right. It makes us think right, and we think about what we're going to say to them along. And that helps us. I've told people a lot of times about when I go somewhere to preach a meeting like I am now, I say, I guess I probably get more good out of meeting anybody there because I have to think about what I'm going to say. As soon as I get through this lesson, I got to think about what about tomorrow night. And it helps us to keep our thinking in better order if we're going to teach someone else. I want to read a verse from 1 Corinthians 9:25, and I guess right here is where the crux of the matter really lies. 1 Corinthians 9, Paul uses an illustration from the sports world. We're a sports-minded world. And verse 24, he says, 1 Corinthians 9:24. Know ye not that they that run in a race run all, but one receives a prize? Even so, run that you may attain. Now, what he's talking about is living the life of a Christian. You run, you live, so as you may attain the goal of heaven. And every man that strives in the games exercises self-control in all things. Those that get out here and they play in the games, they've got to exercise, have to watch what they eat, they have to exercise self-control in all things. I therefore so run is not uncertainly, so fight I is not beating there. I buffet my body and bring it into bondage, lest by any means after that I have preached to others, I myself should be rejected. So Paul said, I have to exercise self-control. We walk down the street, and here's some man out there that doesn't have a thing in the world on a little old pair of shorts. He's a big macho, you know. And all the women turn their heads and take a look. And here's some woman, some girl, doesn't have any more gumption than to get out and be out here exercising, running, or walking down the street, or in the grocery store, and has on just the skimpiest, flimsiest of little clothes. What do we have to do? Exercise self-control. That's what I've got to do. That's what you'll have to do. And that's what everybody will have to do that wants to think right. Because we live in a wicked, wild society. And if you're out here with some people, there are going to be some people going to drink. There are going to be some people who think they'll commit fornication. We live in a fornicating society, I tell you we do. And Christians are not immune. Where I'm preaching right now, the church was saddened so deeply, we had the young man there who was preaching there who committed fornication, one of the members. Had to get rid of him. But it hurts. Oh, it hurts to cause Christ. Worst of all, it hurt him, his soul. And I want to read one other passage, and we'll close our study. Look at 1 Timothy 5:1-2. It says here in 1 Timothy 5:1-2, and my point that I'm going to make is if we want to stimulate good thoughts, then we need to have the proper conduct toward people of the opposite sex. Rebuke not an elder, but exhort him as a father. The younger men, Paul said to Timothy, you treat them like a brother. Now, Timothy, you're a young man, but the elder women, you treat them like you would your mother. And he said, the younger women, you treat them as you would your sister. And he adds, in all purity. Young ladies, don't let young men handle your body. Young men don't handle the bodies of